Hello, mate.
What?
How you doing?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah?
I'm all right.
Doing well?
I'm not well, by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
I don't know how much, because we haven't been in touch for about a week, have we?
No, because really? you were away,
Berlin, and
I was away. And then we're now back. Now we're both not away.
We're back.
What's the opposite of away? Here. We're not both here.
Home is traditionally the opposite of away.
You're there and I'm here. I'm there. You know what I mean? It's all...
You're virtually here. I'm physically here.
Yeah.
And partially I'm emotionally here.
And at my end, I'm not emotionally here. It's been a rough week.
Yeah, it has. You've had a rough week, haven't you?
Well, I mean, obviously, compared to some people I know, they're not even close. But yeah, it's been... It hasn't been much fun.
No, it's bad.
It's horrible. You know, it's... I won't spare, you know, the listeners the details, but suffice to say it's been an incredibly rough week. And anybody who's my Facebook friend will have seen something, you know, me share something that probably gives you an idea of what's going on.
Yeah, it's not good.
Really sad.
Very sad indeed. Mm. Well, I had that back injury. I hurt my back and I couldn't, like, for a week I couldn't move.
Basically.
And I was off work sick for a week, and then I went back to work for 2 days, and the idea was, like, 2 days, because I thought I've got to force myself to get back into it because I've got a flight and I've got a week away in the sun, so I wanted to sort of try and force myself to get well. The second day back at work I got the flu and then I flew out on the Tuesday, and then on the Wednesday, like, we recorded the Tuesday night, and I had the flu. Because I was riding the mute button, do you remember?
Yeah.
I've still got... There we go, look. I've still got a bit of the cough. Mm-hmm. So, that night I slept on the sofa. That night we recorded, I went downstairs. I thought, I'll sleep on the sofa because my back was killing me.
Yeah.
So, I made my way downstairs, slept on the sofa because it was a little bit more firm than the bed. But then, about 3 a.m., I was shaking, really, like, rattling.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, well, it must be cold down here. It didn't occur to me at all that that was a fever.
Yeah.
And I went to bed and I stayed in bed, like, really late into the next day. And then I moved from the bed back to the sofa. And that was the night we were going up to the airport. And I still went to the airport. And, like, against my better judgment, I think we should have probably called time on it.
Mm.
And said, let's write this holiday off and stay at home.
Right.
But we didn't. And we flew out. And on the Thursday when we got there, I went to bed, got up, ate something very, very briefly, and then went back to bed again. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, Lisa came down with the flu as well.
Oh, blimey.
So the two of us were away.
Yeah.
And sick as pigs.
Oh, that's rough, man.
It was not good. It was not fun.
I had a comparatively quiet and calm and sedate holiday, you know.
You had a nice time, didn't you?
I had a holiday. You know, Jen wasn't so lucky because she had to work, but I had a holiday.
Is that why you were there? Is that why you were over there?
Yes and no, yeah. I mean, the original thing was she was being sent over there for work anyway, and last year I didn't take enough holiday, so some rolled over.
Right.
And essentially it meant I got the best part of a week for free.
Nice.
And it, you know, paid rather, not for free, but paid, and not I don't have to take additional unpaid holiday to make it work. So I thought, well, why not use that to go out with her and give myself a bit of R&R? And sure enough, I got plenty. You know, I had... I'd say 2.5 days to myself during the sort of time of this work that she was doing. So I was left to my own devices to wander the streets of Berlin, or the parks of Berlin in this case, because that's where I ended up going.
I was following you. Creepy as that might sound.
There's some nice sights. No, I mean, to be fair, if Instagram and Twitter have kind of become synonymous with my photo taking to a point. I'm not one of these people. I have a nice camera, but I'm not very good with it. So, and I'm under no illusions about the fact that I'm not very good with cameras. So I'm very much happy to use my phone to take pictures. I'd like to think I have a decent eye for a good shot, but I don't necessarily have the wherewithal to make it really, you know, to take a decent shot and make it great.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing. I love photography. I'm really into photography, and I did a whole bunch of stuff, wedding photos and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, like, I put the proper camera down a couple of years ago, when I started blogging and podcasting or what have you, and I bought a little mirrorless like compact thing. It still has interchangeable lenses, but it means it's easier to travel with for a start. But I forget a lot of, if I don't put these skills into practice all the time, I start to forget them. So I learned all this stuff. I taught myself a whole bunch of stuff when I was shooting weddings, and it's kind of all gone. You know, every now and then a thing pops back into my mind. I think, oh yeah, I can do that. Like, I'll push this button and that thing happens. And so yeah, you can see why I was such a successful wedding photographer.
Well, with technical jargon like that, I mean, you really know your stuff.
That's how I sold myself, I think. I press these buttons and these things. Ooh. Yeah, but yeah, so I really enjoy it. But I can recommend a YouTube channel of a guy that I've just sort of fallen into step with recently. Okay. I absolutely love this guy. His name's Peter McKinnon.
Okay.
And his channel, he's a photographer and a cinematographer, but a large portion of the channel is vlogging.
Right.
Like Casey Neistat style.
Okay.
But there's a whole bunch of tutorials in there as well about how to shoot photographs, how to shoot video, how to edit post work on all of these things, like in Lightroom and in Photoshop. And the guy's amazing. And I do, looking at the stuff that he's doing, I'm thinking, how do you get there?
Yeah.
Because I had no idea how to get there. I wouldn't even be able to imagine some of the stuff, some of the work he kicks out. You know, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Really good.
It's often the way, isn't it? You find yourself looking at somebody going, I don't even know how you thought to do that.
Yeah.
Let alone, you know.
Yeah, let alone develop the workflow. And because he's very shrewd as well. So he's built like an online store. So he sells all of his little, you can sell like packs of, I forget what they call them now, but they're in the software, like in Photoshop and in Lightroom.
Oh, I know the kind of thing you mean, yeah.
Yeah, like little shortcuts and things
like widgets, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he sells them. So he's developed all of these all of these workflows for his particular look, and you can buy it.
Yeah,
and apply it to your own photographs, which I think is really cool. Very, very interesting guy. His videos are great fun, and a lot of them are really short.
Mm.
And for somebody that's, you know, we've both flirted with YouTube in the past, doing bits and pieces on YouTube, it's very interesting to see someone take that platform and do something unusual with it.
Yeah.
Which is all too rare these days, but he does things like 2-Minute Tuesdays, where it just literally spend 2 minutes teaching you a skill for maybe it's to make your Instagram feed better, or maybe it's to make a shortcut in your software that will speed up your workflow.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of an intro before and a little bit of an outro afterwards, but the actual tutorial is 2 minutes long. So in under 5 minutes, he's got a piece of really good video out there.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. You should check him out, mate.
I might well do, you know, because that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really
I'm just on YouTube at the moment, writing the descriptions for a piece of video stuff.
Oh, yeah. What you got going out?
It's a teaser trailer for the next big tabletop project on E14. It's one of Brad's. It's quite exciting. It's actually Star Wars themed, so I think you might dig it.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I will maybe tell you about it off air rather than on a recording, just because I don't know whether the first one will drop in time. So
cool.
Just for now, I'm going to say there's something cool coming on Emotionally 14, Star Wars, a Star Wars themed thing.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Maybe we should collaborate on a playlist or something.
Well, I mean, the other option is I can give, you know, we can work something out where I can share the videos on Commonwealth or whatever.
Like,
just embed them.
Yes.
So that people get to come along. Yep. That'd be a cool way of doing it.
Yeah. All the views stay with your channel then, don't they?
Yeah, but then you get to sort of, it's content at the end of the day, right? It's all good stuff, which is it's always nice. And I'm, funny enough, I'm rethinking some things at the moment with regards to Emotionally 14, so I'll probably chat to you about those off air as well, because I think some of them might be up your street.
Oh, cool, awesome. Yeah, I did. I've done a fair amount of content creation this week, as I've been
you're pretty good
wrapping up the Patreon campaign. For the time being, as we put that little puppy on pause.
Yeah, indeed. I listened to the daily. Obviously, we've spoken about it a little bit behind the scenes, you and I, about this stuff. So I think it's probably the best decision.
Yeah, I'm getting that from a lot of people. I think people understand where I'm coming from, and I've got like we're recording this on a Thursday.
Yes.
On Friday, I've done a 45 minute podcast explaining.
Explaining my position. I saw you share that somewhere. I can't remember where it was now.
Yeah, it's 45 minutes long. It's like a three act sort of story, if you like, where the VIP program started. Where we are now with the Patreon campaign and why I feel kind of lost in it, and what my hopes are for the future of it, and how I and what I think I need to do to sort of redress the imbalance that I'm sort of seeing. It's taken a lot. It's taken a long time. We've spoken about it a lot. I've spoken to Tim about it. I've spoken to Kyle about it a lot.
Yeah.
Taken a lot of advice, a lot of guidance. Mm-hmm. From people, as I've tried to work out, because I'm still not entirely sure what I think about it. I am very sure about how I feel about it.
Yeah,
and I feel very lost and very confused about the whole Patreon thing. But I don't know. I haven't been able to intellectualize any of that stuff yet. I need to be away from it, I think, so I can consider it objectively.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the people listening to this, because this, like, from what you were saying, this is going to find its way out in some form. Just be thankful, because the alternative was that I was given the keys, and you might think you want that, but you don't. You really, really don't.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole. I was so when we were talking in those terms, I was unsure what I wanted from the whole thing.
Yeah, totally understood. My feeling on it was very much from experience of letting things sit idle for a long time with creative projects and blogs and podcasts, it just destroys any momentum you've built. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you even at least keep something ticking over, a certain core will stick around.
Yeah.
And when it comes to things kicking back into gear, you bring back the people who sort of fell to the wayside, but you've still got that core who've always kind of, you know, G'd you up. And like I say, this is something I've suffered through in the past. So I didn't want you to go through that. I didn't want you to take a year, you know, let's say for argument's sake, you took a year off and we all just kind of went off and did our own thing for a year. And then it's like, you know what? I want to get back into it. You come back and it's just crickets.
It's
horrendous. Yeah. It would just be soul destroying. Like I say, I can speak from experience. It is.
Yeah. We unplugged the main show for a week and the download numbers drop like a stone.
Of course,
It's not a commentary on any of the content that goes out in its place, because we can record, like when you and I, Steve and Paul, used to record like the audio commentaries or something to go out in place of the main show, the numbers still dropped.
Yeah,
because people just think, well, that's not the thing.
It's not current. Yeah. It's just a thing. You could get it, and theoretically, you could get it any time. And speaking of podcasting, actually, I've managed to make some progress on that project that I was telling you about.
Are you willing to talk about that on air? Or?
Yeah, I can talk about it.
Do it then.
Yeah.
So frame it for people. What is it?
I will happily do so. So it's taken a weird shape compared to how I was originally considering it. So the original concept came from a conversation I had with Brad, and we were talking about his books, because he's published, you know, he was started getting published last year, and he's produced some books, and I've just finished his latest one. Really, it's cracking. It's really good stuff. So we were chatting away, and I was saying, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised that he's doing it. I'm pleasantly surprised he's continued with it, and I'm pleased that it's going, you know, that he's getting enjoyment out of it. And I think I made some comment to the effect of I would love to do that, but I wouldn't even know where to start writing, what to start writing about, because I've had ideas for fiction before and it's never really amounted to anything. Mainly because I start off with a nice premise and then I get stuck when I don't know what happens next. And you know, I sort of, a lot of the time I have a beginning and an end and I don't know what happens in the middle.
We've all got those, Rob,
to varying degrees as well. So you know, I might have my very first stand-up show in 2005 was I had 10 minutes to fill, and I had a really good I thought I had a good beginning and a good end, and I had nothing in the middle, and I didn't realize how much I needed to fill, so I winged it and I improvised on my first my entire, a good half of my thing on the first out. And it was very, you know, it was a gamble. And luckily it paid off. Anyway.
I don't envy that position
so quite,
at all.
Quite commonly, that's where I struggle with creative writing and things like that. Is I start off, I have a premise and I have where I want the story to ultimately end up, but I don't really know how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Through the course of the conversation, he sort of brought up the subject of nonfiction. I said, well, I don't really know, I'm not really knowledgeable enough in any one area of discussion to even venture forth a point of view on that stuff. I mean, there's a ton of stuff I take interest in, but I'm not. I like my video games. I couldn't tell you the detailed history of some of these companies. I could give you the gist because I've probably picked it up from somewhere else, but I couldn't give you the really detailed, you know, Blake Harris kind of history of Sega between these dates and Nintendo's, you know, quarterlies and people going in and out and who was significant in these hirings and firings and so on.
Sounds like an absolute crap ton of research, that,
doesn't it? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I felt sufficiently enthused, I'd probably do it. So he said, what about podcasting? I said, well, I know some stuff about it. He said, I'd read that, you know. And it sounds weird to say, but it was probably just the one person saying, I'd read something you wrote on this subject that made me think, oh, okay, somebody would read it. So I went away and I thought about it, and I came up with this original premise, which was a how to get your podcast to production. Pamphlet, almost like an extended pamphlet. It wouldn't be a big hefty tome. It would be a small novella sized chunk of information,
which is ideal actually, because if for those people who would utilize that, they would be intimidated by the big hefty tome, wouldn't they?
Indeed. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So that is the original premise, and it's held relatively to that shape, but it's evolved a little bit. So now the way I'm framing it is the following. I feel in anything in life, if you apply yourself to any endeavor, whether it be it creative, financial, personal, any kind of development goal, but the most successful people, I read a book about this that kind of galvanized this point of view in my head. The most successful people and the people who derive most fulfillment from success in terms of goal accomplishment are the ones who build in the questioning heavily into their method. So it's constantly evaluating and asking questions of yourself and forcing yourself to think of obstacles that you might encounter along the way. Now, they may come to nothing, but you've thought about them. So if they come, they're not a surprise. And if something else comes, you might have thought along those lines and you have a method. So what it's become is a list of existential questions to pose yourself before you start a podcast about that will give you a clear understanding of what you're doing. And now I'll give you an example. One of the questions is, who is this for? And ultimately, one of the key things is there's no wrong answers to any of these questions. It's just about the subjective answer you give yourself.
Yeah.
So in example of who's it for, is it just for people like you? Fine. Do you see a niche that's not being served that you want to pursue aggressively? Also fine. But it helps to have these ideas in your head because it will help you to frame what you're doing, and it will also help you to target when it comes to things like social media management and networking. It will help you to figure out who you're going to go after. And a lot of people I've spoken to, and I probably will speak to lots of podcasters about this and get some thoughts on some of these questions and maybe answer them. It doesn't have to be ahead of time. You know, what did you think of this at the time you started? It's more like looking back, what would you say is the answer to this question? And the other one is, what's unique, the unique selling point of your podcast? And again, there's no wrong answer, but it's about
identifying it for yourself.
Yeah, identifying it for yourself. And what I've also found is if I punctuate these stories with anecdotes about my own podcasting and people I've interacted with, and you pop up a couple of times because, you know, there's a few things I think you're a good example of. There things like if the answer to the question, what is unique about your show, is simply the people on it and their opinions on this thing, whether it's movies or TV or games or pop culture or just, you know, their comedic interpretation if it's a comedy podcast, it doesn't matter. The answer is largely irrelevant in the grand scheme. The answer is important for you, and it will actually help to ground you when it comes to going forwards, and you'll stay. My thinking is that if you answer these questions honestly, and you might come to some not unpleasant conclusions, but less desirable conclusions, but at least you'll be humble about it when you start going, and you won't be spending your time saying I'm the best at this already. I'm the greatest that ever lived, Muhammad Ali style. And you know, he threw some good punches for sure. not gonna knock the guy there, but. The important thing about it is to come up with the answers to these questions just for the purposes of having a plan and having an idea and having a thing. And, you know, like I say, I fall back on myself as an example most commonly because it's the experience I can draw from the most commonly. And a lot of the answers to those questions for me are there's nothing inherently unique about the Crazy Train, for example. There's nothing whatsoever unique about the E14 Gamecast apart from the personalities and the different tastes and things like that. That's what's unique about it. So I don't go into it thinking nobody else is doing this. We are unique in our field, because we're not. And I think maybe my feeling is that too many outlets go into the world with that mentality of like, I'm doing something truly unique. A comedy podcast where we don't have a subject.
Yeah.
Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
So one of the examples I give is how I decided to do the Crazy Train in the first place. And it is literally, I heard somebody else do a similar premise and I thought that would make a good show with me and my friends because I find them hilarious.
Mm.
And that's all it is.
Well, that's how I got into podcasting, because Lisa would sit and listen to Paul, Steve, our friend Andy and myself have a conversation which would invariably get heated, and you've experienced it firsthand. She would find that endlessly entertaining. She said, you lot got to record yourselves talking. So that became the Movie Geeks Filmcast, which was another one of those things where it's four blokes talking about film, where you throw a stone in iTunes, you'll hit that show a dozen times over.
Oh, sure, yeah. And I mean, I know dozens of examples off the top of my head of that sort of thing. But again, it's about those unique perspectives and those unique points of view.
Yeah.
And that's all it has to be. It doesn't have to be as clear-cut as, oh, well, we're, you know, everybody watches Netflix podcasts. Everybody watches Netflix movies and podcasts about the worst ones, but we give it a score out of 4. But
golf clap.
Yeah, seriously. It's just like I say, there's nothing inherently wrong with coming up to the conclusion that your show is not unique in any grand topical manner, but it's good to have those discussions with yourself before you start.
Yeah.
And before and as you start, and you know, as you go along. And it's good to be, you know, I am a neurotic mess. I'm fully on board with this, but I think actually it's one of the reasons I'm quite good at this stuff is because I'm very self-aware. I have to, you know, it's something I can't get out of. Yeah. I force myself to confront things that actually aren't a problem. You know, you wouldn't believe if I rattled off a list of the number of people I'd think don't like me, you'd know some of those names and you'd be like, I don't think that's true at all. But the fact is, I've considered that possibility.
Yeah.
So if it turns out to be true, I'm not going to be shocked. You know?
When you apply that sort of perspective to what we do, I think it is like everything you've just said, the bullet points you've already hit from your writing are things that I ran through when starting this. I ran through, you know, and maybe I'm a little bit neurotic, but I constantly challenge everything we're doing and is this right? Is this the right direction? Is this something I've spoken about a lot this week? Is this something I'm proud of? Is this something I'm in love with? Is this something I would want to consume if I wasn't making it?
Yeah.
And that was always behind, like, the start of the podcast was what was missing. What can't I find in a podcast? Because I was, you know, I've always enjoyed the shows that I've picked up, the Star Wars shows that I've picked up. But I've always felt like there's something missing. I was never really sure what it was. And it's kind of the listener comms thing. It's having listener comms up the front of the show, front loaded. So that it's more like a community, it's more like a town hall meeting every episode, you know, of these names that pop up every week of people writing in and chit-chatting about Star Wars with us. That's what I was looking for. I didn't realise it until we started making it. And that might exist out there. I just never found it because the big boys aren't doing that. The big boy shows are all... they seem to be cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we... You know, I'm glad that we challenge what we do continually and make sure that it's right, because I think that's important. You know, when you identify what it is you're trying to do, it prevents you from stepping all over it. If you know what your aim is... That's the thing you won't undo. And you try and preserve that because, oh, that's the only thing that works. I will challenge everything else. If this is the thing that works, this is the thing that stays. So, yeah, I like it. So what's your schedule?
So I've written about 4,000 words while I was in Berlin.
Wow.
And it's taken... Originally, the plan was to write three parts, which would be existential, technical, and then the third part, which has not kind of taken shape yet.
Right.
But actually, I'm kind of considering scrapping the technical and just sticking, and then once I finish the existential and I've got to the point where you are ready to record, and I've maybe gone through some sort of advice about how to record, not the technical side of it, but because we were talking before we started recording about a recording edit that's been particularly difficult for me because of a lot of technical issues, and a lot of them are born out of the fact that of the setup I've gone with, and there's a few issues there that are non-technical, but they've resulted in technical issues, if that makes sense. So I'm gonna kind of, I was originally considering doing a technical thing of like, okay, now you've recorded it, how do you get it to iTunes and all that stuff, but I feel like there's enough material on that on the web. And it's relatively digestible.
Yeah, and a lot of it you can kind of box out. You don't have to sort of go into heavy detail, do you? It's like Kevin Smith. No. He's always sort of thrown away, oh, you can do a podcast on your phone. You can even edit it and publish it on your phone.
Yeah, totally.
And what we know is when you get into this thing and you do that thing where you're constantly taking stock of the thing that you're making, you're constantly challenging the thing that you're making, you know that you won't stick with recording on the mic on your laptop for very long.
No.
If you're challenging the thing you're making, you're going to think, oh, I need to find a way, plug a mic into this thing. I need to find a way to get the soundboard, get a mixer, get an intro and an outro. And, you know, it is, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Well, say the original plan was to do a conceptual, existential, technical, and potentially a sort of evaluatory, you know, that would be the third phase. You've done it for a little while. Okay, now to take stock and all that stuff. I'm actually tempted to cut the technical bit out completely and go before and after you start.
Yeah.
And then just make you can still have the entire premise.
Your three parts, couldn't you, with an existential approach to those three parts, like the before you record your first episode, the recording of the first episode and publishing, right? And then the afterglow or the fallout of that first episode when you're evaluating it. Because you have to, I think. Yeah. Anything that you do, you have to sort of challenge it. And
yeah, I think that's true. And as a result, I think actually the original plan, a decent chunk of it can be scrapped. And, you know, it will end up being ready that much quicker. And what I think will be better, and this is one of those things, because I work in software, one of the things that they're very keen on in software is, if you're going to fail, fail fast and learn from it. And then because the next time you deliver, you're going to have that knowledge, that learning on top.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you might have the best idea for a website in the world. And actually, there's a idea in my head churning at the moment about a website, and I think it would be a good idea. But I know it's never going to see the light of day because I haven't broken it down and been granular. Mm-hmm. And I would have to do that if I wanted to approach it seriously. I would say, right, what do I need to do to make it launchable? And then from there, I say, okay, now I can add the extra stuff that makes it special. But if somebody turns around and says, oh, I think the launch product's crap, I can go, okay, well, I can I'll fix that first, and then I'll start adding the stuff on. Yeah. And then you know, it's much better to iterate on something that's out there and actually getting listens and getting feedback, and you build on that. And, you know, this is something I've struggled with in the past, with spending too much time
procrastinating
or even just perfecting. Mm. So I'll record something, I'll record raw material, and then I'll sit there tweaking it for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
And it all the time it's not out there, I don't know if it's any good or not. So it might be the best product, you know, the what I start with and what I get to, like, say I record a video and I go in and just cut out the bits that are literally rubbish, and I want to cut them, just get down to a tight, you know, like I'm record 15 minutes of raw material, I end up with a tight 10.
Yeah.
That 10 might be good to go. And I'll spend endless amounts of time trying to refine it down to 9.5 for no discernible reason other than because I'm a perfectionist.
Mm.
And it can be quite damaging, because you end up
losing
out on learning from what you've published. Like some of the stuff that people like about things I do, it's often a surprise to me because it's not the thing I expected people to like.
Yeah. I know. It's usually, you know, it's always happened to me. I said this, tomorrow there's a 45-minute podcast going out where I sort of discuss the fact that one of the things I've noticed since running the Patreon is that I've broken one of my very early rules, which was when I kicked Talk Star Wars off, I got it rolling and then out of the way. I got out of its way and followed it. Now, a lot of people will probably think if you're running anything, if you're making anything, you probably want to be able to
steer it.
But I don't believe that that's the right approach to this thing. I do believe that if I was starting a business as like a tax man or doing people's income tax, it might be beneficial if I could steer this thing where it was going. But this is a creative endeavor, and I just felt that from the start of this, once we got it moving, I would just let it go and follow it, because I would be following the things that were landing with people. I'd be following the successes, in inverted commas. So when people like something, I will put more of it in, because I know that that's the sort of thing that's getting play. And then that means, you know, the other side of that equation is I'm challenging the things that aren't working and letting them go. And I'm not afraid to kill my darlings in that respect. But with Patreon, I managed to lose sight of that. And I've been very much trying to shape and guide this thing down a certain route, wrestling it to the ground when it's really not working, or not working the way I want it to work. So I broke my first rule, which was just stay behind this thing and follow it where it's going, and respond to the things that are successful and make sure that I nurture them and care for them, and let the things that aren't working die.
Yeah.
So, you know, they are important. I think, you know, I may have been behind this thing, but at least I've identified it, because the one thing I do routinely is challenge those things. But to steer back to the point that you were just making about, you know, getting that thing out there and then tweaking it when it's, you know, launching it and then tweaking it when it's in flight, I think is a good policy.
Yeah.
And another person that I really admire, and I've spoken about a lot, and I think I may have mentioned him once already this evening, Casey Neistat, has a saying where he says, don't let the pursuit of perfection get in the way of good enough. It's sometimes better to settle for 75% and get 100% completed project out there, then pursue 100% and never release that thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I think this is why I've been thinking about this, you know, as this has taken shape and I've started to write more of an existential take on it rather than a technical, you know. There's certain bits in there that are, you know, they're more technical than existential. Things like, if you're choosing a name, have a look, do your due diligence to make sure that somebody's not already using it, because it's more difficult to change once you get rolling. Not impossible, but more difficult.
Yeah, and good advice.
It might kill any momentum you have as well, if you have to turn around and go, you know what, I'm good. You know, if I'd started the Crazy Train and then found out 10 episodes in that somebody else had called the Crazy Train, I'd be like, oh crap, I haven't got a backup plan.
Yeah.
And even if it just means you have a backup plan of like, oh well, if it does turn out to be taken, I'll use this name instead. That sort of thing is, again, it's just arming yourself with all the consideration.
When you think about everything you have to plug in to an endeavor, as well. So, like with Talk Star Wars, the first thing I did was, when the name struck me as being the thing, I went and found out, is it in use on Twitter, Facebook, in iTunes? Is it in use anywhere?
Yeah, totally.
Excuse me. And it wasn't. It wasn't until later. It wasn't until after we launched that another Facebook group popped up that was named Talk Star Wars. They didn't get the vanity URL because I got there first. But they, you know, now anyone can be Talk whatever they want. But we got to the Star Wars thing first.
I've seen people going like, let's talk Star Wars. It's like, I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
I see you.
Yeah.
But you know,
there won't be any brand confusion, that's for sure. No. But it is a thing.
I've had one name crop up, which is, there was a German spirituality podcast that called themselves The Crazy Train. But about a week after they started, I got a really apologetic Twitter DM that said, I'm so sorry, I didn't check. I didn't realize it was in use. And I was like, I think as a German spirituality podcast versus a bunch of Muppets from the UK talking rubbish for an hour and a half, I think we'll be okay.
Their podcast might have been off brand a little bit, mightn't it?
Somewhat, you know. At the same time, I'm very keen on acquisition this year. So maybe if they're thinking about jacking it all in, I'll take that on, and maybe I can brush up on my German.
That'd be an interesting angle.
Oh, wouldn't it be amazing? Like, you know, banging my head against the wall of trying to sort of make myself a name in the UK comedy podcasting circuit, and I end up becoming a German spirituality guru.
I've always fancied myself as like a televangelist. I really like that idea of the big sideburns and a pompadour quiff.
I think I'd make a fantastic event, you know, like preacher.
Evangelical preacher, yeah.
Yeah. I turned up on a podcast a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember if I mentioned it to you. They're a UK-based outfit called Woo Long Talks.
Right. No, you didn't mention it.
No, I popped up on there because we were talking, and we talked about various different things, but they're very much in my wheelhouse and our wheelhouse. So we talked about geek stuff, movies, video games, tabletop games, the works, you know. We went for a long time because it's me, ultimately. Once you get me going, the trick is shutting me up. and we were talking about, and I sort of reiterated a point I've made on Talk Star Wars before about podcasters should be using our platform to advance discussion. Rather than we shouldn't be the ones saying this discussion about this is rubbish. We should set a better example because we have the long form format and we have complete autonomy on where the discussion goes because we are gatekeepers of our own, you know, we are control gates for our own content.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most like a politician I'd ever sounded, and it was a little bit unsettling because that's probably a career I'm quite interested in that stuff, but I don't think want to get anywhere near it if I could avoid it.
Yeah,
just because it strikes me as a particularly joyless and thankless life. Yes. Even if you're good at it, I don't think you can ever really please anybody.
Well, you're certainly not everybody.
Yeah, well, that's very much true. But you know,
oh, that's interesting. What's that podcast called again? Where can people find it?
Woo Long Talks. WooLongTalks.com.
Awesome.
I believe that's the URL name, but Woo Long Talks on Twitter is definitely the URL, the account. And they're really lovely guys. I had a long, you know, nice long chat with them about all sorts of stuff, and it was brilliant.
Is that through the network that you kind of joined us? Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's one of these ones where it wasn't one I was aware of before, but as soon as I became aware of them, I was like, I must go back and hear all of the things they've done.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I've tried. I mean, you know this because we've talked about it before. If you're a podcaster, keeping up with your podcast backlog is a never-ending quest for dents.
Yeah.
To make a dent in your week is enough, and that feels like a victory. So it's not something – there's no show, I don't think, not anymore certainly, where I can say I listen to every single episode apart from the ones I edit and the ones I record on.
There's a couple that I listen to, and I have my little routine because if I walk the dog, I will – plug something in straight away. But I've set myself a new rule because I'm suffering with that backlog thing, and I binge listen.
Okay.
So I have a couple of shows that have downloaded, and I'll let it get that far out of control, and then I'll binge listen to both back to back until that show's off the list and I'm caught up, and then I'll go off to the next one and catch up. Then I'll go off to the next one and catch up rather than listen to one here, one there, because I don't feel like I'm making up any ground. But
You know what's a really good way of getting through backlog, I found? 1.3 speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you can, because it's not always doable, but when you can, it's really good. Because some people talk just way too fast.
Yeah. I've listened to ours on 1.25 before.
Sorry.
I was thinking, oh, this was
not too bad.
Moving at a nice clip. So
yeah,
perhaps I should make an effort to speak faster when we're actually recording. The thing is, I can't think fast enough to speak fast enough, so I would just be rambling on. Nonsense. Anyway, talking about our other show, should we go and record that?
I think we should, you know.
Okay, let's wrap this thing up then. I'll see see you on the other side of this call, mate.
Okay, mate. Nice.